there's ever been an industry in need of disruption, it's real estate. The process of buying or selling a home is both tedious and stressful, complicated and confusing, emotional and exhausting. Gotta find a realtor you trust. If you're buying, get ready for the roller coaster of the offer rejection cycle, just as adrenaline pumping as an actual roller coaster, but not half as fun. And if you're selling, get ready to have to fix up the place, maybe even stage it, get some offers, but never be quite sure 100% who will actually make it to closing. And then you've got to pay the realtor's commission if you didn't go through the considerable effort of listing it yourself. I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if it were all just more efficient? Enter the world of algorithmic home buying.
When you want to buy this place, but first you have to sell this place, Zillow Offers makes it easy. Get a no-obligation cash offer for your home. No showings, home prep, or hassle. Request your offer today at Zillow.com/offers.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And yes, that was an ad from real estate giant Zillow, touting their service, Zillow Offers. Until recently, one of the biggest players in the algorithmic home buying business, better known as iBuying. Now, we'll talk about the until recently part in just a minute. But back in 2014, another company called Open Door was the first big mover to insinuate an algorithm into the brick-and-mortar business of home buying. The company introduced computer-generated instant offers to the market. Fast, all-cash offers to homeowners in competitive housing markets, all online. Open Door CEO Eric Wu gave a demo to Arizona Tech Beat soon after they launched in Phoenix.
And we tell you exactly what the offer is, and minus some fees, and what you're going to net in cash. If you want to continue with the offer, you click there. And everything's streamlined online. So you have your forms here, you have your calendar to schedule an inspection, and all of the closing docs. And so literally, you can go from submitting your address to getting an offer and then closing all online.
And yes, that is someone playing ping pong in the background. It gotta love startup culture. But seriously, Open Door says its business model is to take on the risk and costs of holding a home. In return for a competitive offer, homeowners pay a fee to get out of their home and their mortgages quickly. Julie Dumbia from Portland, Oregon, talks about why she chose to sell her house to Open Door. And this is from a promotional video on the company's website.
By coincidence, we were talking to one of our neighbors who was in the process of selling their home through Open Door, and it just sounded like a dream of a process. I mean, literally, you put in your address and you answer some questions, and then they schedule a video walkthrough, and you get your estimate. We just couldn't believe it was as easy as it was. With the Open Door process, we knew exactly how much money we were going to be able to put into our new house. We didn't have to put in a contingent offer. We were just able to say, we're ready to go.
Now, fast forward to 2018 when Zillow entered the iBuying business. In just a few years, Zillow purchased almost 10,000 homes, making aggressive, algorithmically generated offers in markets across the country. Recently, they were in the process of buying 8,000 more homes. Of course, this isn't a buy-and-hold business model. This is a buy-and-flip machine whose profit margin relies entirely on a smart read of where home prices are heading. And who could possibly be better at that than Zillow, the company that brought you the Zestimate?
We have been unable to predict future pricing of homes to a level of accuracy that makes this a safe business to be in.
That is Zillow CEO Rich Barton on an earnings call with investors just 10 days ago. Turns out the algorithm wasn't great at predicting future prices. So Zillow tried to beat the housing market and failed.
We hadn't modeled this kind of pricing market nor supply market to even be possible when we got the business going. And, you know, we've seen all this volatility in both directions right now, in the wrong direction. And we're still at a scale that is small compared to what it needs to be. And so as we put our minds in the state of, all right, we've got these new assumptions that we'd be naive not to assume will happen again in the future. We pump them into the model, and the model cranks out a business that has a high likelihood at some point of, you know, putting the whole company at risk, not just the business.
A company whose market cap tops $16 billion. Zillow faced the fundamental risk of home ownership, but at scale. They were holding properties whose value was heading down, or underwater, a term that survivors of the 2008 housing crisis will be familiar with. Well, just this week, the Wall Street Journal reported that Zillow made a deal to sell 2,000 of its homes to a New York City-based investment firm. Zillow expects to lose more than $500 million on this business. And this month, the company laid off 25% of its staff. So today we're going to talk about iBuying, about what happens when an algorithm is at the heart of home buying in this country. How does it work? Who's behind it? Who stands to gain? What are the risks, not just to companies like Zillow, but to regular home buyers everywhere? Will it change the housing market, and how? Well, joining us now is Gregor Matvos. He's the chair of finance at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, also a research associate in the corporate finance group at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Professor Matvos, welcome to you.
Megan, great to be here.
Okay, so give me your quick assessment of what happened at Zillow that led them to buy more than 10,000 homes and now face a $500 million loss on this business.
Yeah, so, fundamentally, where our research stands, I've done some research with co-authors on this, is that iBuying fundamentally is a tough business. It's a great business for people who want to sell their home, but to actually make money in iBuying, it's not that simple. We can discuss why overall iBuying is just a hard business to be profitable in, even though as consumers, we'd really want it to be there. What happened to Zillow more specifically is, in short, they were overpaying for homes. And then why would you, as an expert, overpay in homes? I think we can speculate a little bit on Zillow. The first thing to realize on Zillow is they're a newcomer in this market. So Opendoor was there in 2014. Zillow entered 4 years later. And my sense is they wanted to aggressively grow market share. And when you do that, you already have to price things a little bit high, right? It's sort of hard to buy houses without and competing with other buyers if you don't price a little bit above everybody else. And then they ran into some headwinds that made it particularly difficult for them to be in this market. So what are some of the headwinds? As you explained in the beginning, one of the things that makes iBuying awesome for a seller is you can get out of your house quickly. You want to move to a new job or you want to look for a new job. These guys take the house off of your hands and you can move on with your life. Now, one of the headwinds that companies like Zillow faced recently is that markets really sped up. In other words, it used to take about 90 days to sell your house on average in the US. Mm-hmm. That's significantly shrunk, especially in the last year.
Yeah.
Which means the proposition from a seller perspective, the value proposition just declined. In other words, you're not offering a service that is that valuable.
Yeah.
So if you're not offering a service that's valuable, then there's another reason why I'm selling you the house. And I'm selling you the house because you overpriced it.
Mm. Well, so let's step back here for a second because you overpriced it, but it's an algorithm essentially that Zillow had developed that was determining the price that the company would offer. So let's talk more broadly. I mean, how does algorithmic home buying work or iBuying work?
Right. So what is an algorithm going to price? I mean, companies like Zillow and Redfin and Opendoor are amazing in taking all the measurable things you can about a home and then projecting what the home price should be. What are the things that an algorithm will miss? Think of you have a neighbor and they have a really messy backyard. Of course, somebody coming to your house and wanting to buy it will realize that they will have to stare at your neighbor's mess for a while and they might not be willing to pay for a house that much. That an algorithm will not capture. Or imagine the house smells. How do you figure out that a house smells in an algorithm? Surely that satellite photography won't do that. And conversely, algorithms get it wrong on the other side too. What if the neighbor's house is awesome? It looks really beautiful. They have a nice backyard feature. They have waterfalls. It just makes you feel really good. Or the back porch gets an amazing amount of sunlight. Or the layout is great. Or the owners really maintain the house. Then the algorithm will underprice the house, right? Mm-hmm. So algorithms do amazing things, but they're not perfect. They can't substitute for everything, including walking into the house and smelling it. So,
yeah. Well, I was just laughing there because, I mean, that's the fundamental truth about real estate. It's real. It is real life. It's an actual physical property whose value, funnily enough, oftentimes is not 100% correlated to the condition of the home. It's all these other things, including location. But the algorithm can look at location here. But we'll get back to specifically how these algorithms were generating the prices and why Zillow may have decided to juice its algorithm to make a little bit more aggressive prices here. But is this a form? We've just got 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break, Professor Matvos. But is this a form, kind of a new form of technology-driven arbitrage in the housing market? Because flipping has been around for a long time, right? It's a form of arbitrage. But this is just supposed to do it at scale and at higher speed, right? The purpose is to squeeze more profit out of the housing market by big companies like Zillow.
I think of the purpose of this is to help people move. And one of the issues we have in the U.S. is that people are locked into their houses and houses are hard to sell. And because houses are hard to sell, people can't look for a new job. They don't even bother to look for a potentially better job a little bit further away because they'd have to sell their house and it would be a mess. So instead, if somebody can take the house off your hands, that is a valuable service you provide. And of course, you need to make a profit off of it.
Right. Well, Gregor Matvos, stand by for just a moment because Professor Matvos is helping us understand what iBuying is, or algorithmic home buying, and why real estate giant Zillow wasn't very good at it, and the impact that it could have on you, the average American home buyer or seller. So we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about iBuying or algorithmic home buying in the United States. And I'm joined today by Gregor Matvos. He is the chair of finance at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. And Professor Matvos, I just want to pick up where we left off here and press you a little, if I may, because I was looking at a recent article in Bloomberg, and in terms of Zillow's motivation in getting into the iBuying business, here's what Bloomberg said. Bloomberg said that one thing that Zillow was very, very good at, and we all know this, was attracting a huge audience to its website, right? Because even if you're not a homeowner, looking at those Zestimates and the pictures of the listings gets kind of compulsive, right? And at one point in time, Zillow attracted almost as many unique visitors to its website in a particular month as there are adults in the United States. So here's what Bloomberg says. It says, quote, executives saw a chance to squeeze far larger profits from its web traffic by getting into actual real estate transaction in which consumers pay tens of thousands of dollars to agents, lenders, and insurers. And that's what led Zillow in 2018 to follow Opendoor, for example, into iBuying. So I'm just wondering what you think about that, the motivation for Zillow to get in there, that to squeeze that profit out of what they already had in terms of their traffic.
I wish they squeezed more profit out of it. In the following way, this is not as tongue-in-cheek as it sounds. I think iBuying is something that we'd all love to see in all of our markets. You know, mobility is a real issue for U.S. households. Houses are hard to sell, as you started the show with. Mm-hmm. So if someone is just willing to give me money immediately so I can move on with my life, that's a valuable service. I think where I fall in is This is actually a service that's difficult to provide, even by experts like Zillow. There's some fundamental economics of the exercise that make it very hard to be profitable. So when we, with my colleagues, when we started looking at this problem of iBuying, we asked ourselves, wait a second, why haven't we had iBuyers around forever? Seems like there's enormous demand for this kind of service. And then what we walked into was, the economics of the business are actually hard to make money on. So if Zillow could have made money on web traffic, but, you know, through that subsidize U.S. household mobility, I think I'd be okay with that.
Okay, so briefly tell me, why is it hard to make money on it then? Because I think the conventional wisdom would be the U.S. housing market, especially right now, given the historic low inventory and in many markets how the prices are only going up and up and up, would be a place where, you know, speedy transactions, a more efficient process, and also, you know, big private money could come in and make quite a healthy turnaround. Why is that not happening?
Yeah, no, so that was, you know, that was in some ways our puzzle too. We struggled with a bit. And I think there's a fundamental tension when you're an iBuyer. Where does the value proposition for the consumer come from? The value proposition comes from being fast. The only reason I sell to an iBuyer is if they can close quickly. If they can't do that for me, I might as well list. Okay? The problem is, of course, you have to be quick and you have to be accurate. Because if you're not accurate, then you miss house prices. So even Zillow figured it out. So the only way to be both quick and somewhat accurate is to use an algorithm. But algorithms miss all the things you and I discussed before, such as the house smells poorly. Now think of who's going to sell their homes to Zillow. You have two reasons to sell a home to Zillow when the algorithm gives you a price. One is you got a great job offer somewhere else. You want to get rid of your house so you can move on with your life. So that's a motivated buyer. That's the buyer Zillow would want because they can make a little bit of a spread on selling their house. They can buy it at a discount. The second buyer is the one whose house smells. Okay, house smells poorly. Algorithm doesn't price that. And they know that if they were to sell the house on their own, they'd be getting much less than the Zillow estimate. And the problem is what happens to iBuyers is they're kind of caught in this pinch, and there's only a certain size of sweet spot where they can be both quick and precise enough. And the third issue is have an unoccupied house for which they're paying costs to make a profit. And that's a very, at least our research suggests, that's a very small part of the market.
Hmm.
Once you start exiting that spot of the market, it's hard to make money. You get more smelly houses and fewer people with urgency, and you have to carry houses for a long time, which makes it very expensive.
Exactly. Because, I mean, again, as I said earlier, this is not a buy and hold business model. But so
exactly.
We're going to hear from the Redfin CEO in just a second here. But I do have one more question. Redfin, Zillow, Opendoor. I mean, these are all companies, couple of them publicly traded. Or at least investor-backed, who are the buyers? Where is the money for the buying coming from?
Who are the buyers of homes from Zillow?
Well, yeah, I guess I'm asking, like, this doesn't seem to be something that I, as a regular home buyer in the United States, might turn to. I'm just wondering, like, is this something that's is the money flowing in from private equity, from hedge funds? Where's the money coming from for the buying?
You know, what we found, at least up to 2018, is that the selling part of iBuying is very pedestrian. They list houses and they sell them. So yes, actually, you could buy a house from Zillow and not even know it. They would list it just like anybody else. Now, part of what's happening nowadays, especially with Zillow, who kind of crashed, is they're selling it to private buyers who are then turning to the rental market. But I think that's, in some ways, there's two separate operations. One is there's been quite a big acquisition by private equity backed firms, partially, of just buying middle class US homes and turning them into rentals. And I think there's almost a separate space of there's iBuyers who list houses when they sell them, but when they get in trouble, they, I think, try to sell them to the private equity shops. But I don't think their business model didn't seem like when we looked was buy to sell to private equity, because let's be honest, private equity can do the valuation on their own. They can buy homes directly. Why pay Zillow?
Okay. So that's fascinating. So Professor Matvos, hang on here for a second, because we did reach out to Zillow for an interview with CEO Rich Barton. They did not respond. But we did talk to the CEO of another major real estate company that's also in the iBuying business.
I'm Glenn Kelman, Redfin CEO.
And Kelman had some pretty strong reactions to the Zillow news, which to him, first of all, means one of his biggest competitors just exited the iBuying market.
Well, it's one less bidder on a property, but Zillow is an incredibly well-run company led by a brilliant entrepreneur, so it should give anyone a moment of pause when the deepest pocket in the entire real estate industry is out of money for this particular type of business.
But Kelman, of course, is in this business, a little bit at least, but he insists that Redfin operates differently.
We are more careful in how we evaluate the homes that we're going to buy. If you have to buy a house every day of the week in every type of market conditions, you are force-feeding yourself these potentially toxic assets. So there are going to be times when the cost of capital and the risk in the housing market is so high that our offers just aren't going to be that compelling, and our iBuying business isn't going to grow at all. And we are absolutely fine with that because our customers can take another choice and we can sell houses another way.
Now, iBuying right now overall in the U.S. housing market makes up just a small fraction, tiny, tiny fraction of home transactions. Phoenix is one of the markets where iBuying makes up one of the largest percentages of transactions, and that's still just 5%. So some context there. And Kelman, the Redfin CEO, says he is not sure that buyer interest in iBuying will continue to rise.
Well, if you had to pick market conditions that were ideal for iBuying, it would be the conditions that we had over the last 2 years, because there was an historic inventory crunch, not enough homes to sell, and incredibly low interest rates. So most tech companies were able to borrow money at literally 0% interest. And so there's all this money and not enough houses. And if you're able to buy houses, you're going to be able to sell them at a profit. And now I think as rates rise and the housing market becomes more balanced, we're going to see how many people really want iBuying.
Now, I just have to pause here for a second because Glenn Kelman came on our show several months ago and said something similar, that tech companies are able to borrow money at literally 0%. Not you, fair individual American home buyer. But he went on and described to us how computers assist humans in determining prices and risk at Redfin. So it's not just purely algorithmically driven. He says there is an algorithm that estimates how long renovation will take and when it can be listed on the market. And these tools are useful, he says, but Redfin would never have a computer completely determine the worth of a home.
We hire a licensed professional inspector to go through every corner of the house to make sure that it really is the way that it seems. There's multiple layers of governance. An offer specialist who is a human being working for Redfin looks at the numbers that the computer spit out and comes up with his or her own assessment of what the property is worth. And then a portfolio manager, who is the offer specialist boss, looks at that number and says, all right, yes, I like it, or let's pay less, or let's pay more.
So Kelman says that iBuying makes up overall about 1% of Redfin transactions.
Many people want to know what they could get in a cash offer, but almost everybody who asks about a cash offer ends up brokering a sale because that's the way you get the most money. Most people need that money to get their next place, and that's why as their fiduciary, as the company that's supposed to be on their side, we're telling them the brokered sale is the better deal. So we are in this business because we recognize that lots of people are going to wonder what their home is worth, and some will take that instant offer.
Well, Kelman tells us that the vast majority of people still end up deciding to list their properties instead. Now, regarding the Zillow failure in the iBuying market, the Wall Street Journal, as we talked about earlier, reported this week that Zillow sold 2,000 homes to Pretium Partners, a New York-based investment firm. And here's the thing, as Professor Gregor Matvos was telling us earlier, that investment firm is reportedly going to turn those homes into rental properties in 20 U.S. markets. So essentially taking them out of the hands of home buyers and turning them into permanent investments for the company. Now, Kelman says that Redfin will never sell to institutional investors. Now, while we were on this call with Glenn Kelman, his press assistant asked him if he was sure he wanted to say never, that they would never sell to individual investors. She kind of nudged him about it. And he said he stands by that. They will never sell to individual investors. He says, though, he does have concerns of the big grip that huge investors and financial tech companies have in the housing market.
I think it's become very fashionable for any company to become a fintech company where you're facilitating speculation, where you're serving an affluent class that's seeking to make more money on top of the money that it already has. And that ain't our way, baby. We are trying to help middle-class people buy houses where we put more money in their pocket because we charge lower fees. And when you are a counterparty instead of a fiduciary, when you sit on the other side of the table instead of the same side of the table of regular people trying to get shelter, you are in the wrong place, baby.
But wait a second, right? I mean, Kelman and Redfin are also, even if marginally, they are also in the business of iBuying. So are they in the wrong place, baby? Well, Kelman claims he doesn't necessarily like the business model of algorithmic home buying, but he says it exists for a reason, the same reason that Gregor Matvos has been talking to us about. The market demands it because he sees a regulatory failure at play here, one that makes it harder for average Americans to buy homes.
What we really need to solve is the fact that people can't easily move up from one house to another. When we reformed credit 10 years ago, we made it impossible to hold two mortgages. And at the same time, you now have to have cash to beat out these investors in a bidding war. So how are you supposed to get your money out of one place into another? Regulators haven't solved that problem. You're going to have all sorts of weird fintech trying to solve that problem. You shouldn't have to sell your house in a fire sale to an iBuyer to solve that problem. There has to be a better way.
We talked with Glenn Kelman for quite a while, and I have to admit, he really couldn't quit the interview. He could not quit the interview without one more message specifically for you, dear listener.
All the crunchy NPR listeners, I'm one of you too. You need to love developers. You need to get the F over it and love people who are trying to build houses, even if they are also trying to make money, because we just need more houses. We need rich houses, we need poor houses, we need all sorts of houses to help make America more affordable. Let's all get behind it.
That's Glenn Kelman, CEO of Redfin, and he spoke with us from Seattle. Now, Professor Matvos, obviously Glenn Kelman has a lot of energy about the overall problem of inventory in this country. But talk to me a little bit more, because he made the same observation that you did, that there's essentially he calls it a regulatory failure in people not being able to hold more than one mortgage at the same time for primary residences, unless they sell their previous home. Does that actually date back to the regulatory changes that happened after 2008?
I completely agree with him that it's very difficult for people to hold two mortgages at the same time. I'm not sure I would ascribe this to a regulatory failure in the following sense. The U.S. mortgage market is incredibly regulated. So I'm very happy to go on record on that. And I've done plenty of research on the fintech role in the mortgage space. But think of what two mortgages means. You have a $500,000 house in which your own equity is $100,000. And then two mortgages means you're going to buy another $500,000 house, but you're going to have the same amount of money invested in housing, your $100,000. So now your $100,000 is backing two houses. It's not obvious to me that this is just a regulatory problem. It's a problem of, it's very hard for most of us to hold the two houses at the same time, whether we borrow against them or not. This is just not a proposition we want people to have.
Right.
So I don't think it's a regulatory problem. It's just, if someone has $100,000 of cash, do we want them to hold two houses at the same time with borrowed money? I'm not sure. So it's not obvious to me this is a regulatory failure. It's a problem of not enough equity to hold two houses.
Okay, so let me just ask you, though, for clarity. I thought you had said earlier that part of the problem is, say someone wants to move, right? Is it possible these days to find that second mortgage for what's going to be your primary residence until you sell your first house? I mean, because that seems to be the space that this iBuying would actually provide a service. Isn't that what you were talking about?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of innovation in this space. For example, you could get a bridge loan between the mortgages. So those products are available. But I think the problem at the end of the day is, it's just, if you don't have enough money to buy two houses, I'm not sure I would want to encourage people to then have enough credit to hold two houses. What if then you can't sell the first house? What if then you now have to service two mortgages, and then you have to all of a sudden, and then the your first house in the market for 90 days, 100 days, 120 days, and you're paying for two mortgages, it's not obvious to me that the solution is let's make mortgages more easily available to people who are, you know, people are hard pressed to buy one house. We want them to hold two houses at the same time? No, I think we want to help them get rid of one house quickly so they can buy another. And I'm not sure that's iBuying is, I mean, our research says iBuying will not be a solution for most markets in the US for this. But I think trying to think about innovation in this market and how to help people do that is definitely valuable.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about that when we come back. Gregor Matvo, stand by for a second. We're talking about algorithmic home buying or iBuying and why Zillow wasn't very good at it, but really what it means for you, the average American home buyer. So we'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On Monday on the show, we're going to talk about COVID treatments. Of course, vaccination is still really key to ending the pandemic, but there are quite a few treatments for the disease on the horizon. 11 treatments already authorized by the FDA for emergency use, one actually approved. More than 470 now in the trial stage. So we're going to learn all about COVID treatments, and we want to know if there's anyone out there who's had one of these COVID treatments, maybe the monoclonal antibodies. What happened? What was it like? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for the show next week. Today, we're talking about iBuying in the American housing market or algorithmic home buying. And our conversation, of course, triggered by real estate giant Zillow's failure in the iBuying space, if I can put it that way, $500 million loss that Zillow's facing because of that. But we're going deeper and asking, what is algorithmic home buying? What impact could it have on the housing market? How does it work? And is it the kind of thing that the American real estate market actually needs right now? I'm joined today by Gregor Matvos. He's chair of finance at Northwestern University. And joining us now as well is Jeff Myers. He's the CEO of Zonda, a data intelligence company that informs and connects housing industry experts. So, Jeff Myers, welcome to you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
So, tell me a little bit about what Zonda does specifically.
Sure. We're the largest data provider to the home building industry throughout North America. So we have databases throughout Canada and the United States. And in doing and solving data for new home construction, we also solve the resale market. So we have over 700 million records and track, you know, from every stage of construction, from initial land entitlement all the way through closed home.
Okay. And so then are you engaged in iBuying in the housing market?
You know, we are not. We certainly study it and we, you know, are very aware of the techniques used in solving, you know, the buyer journey. I think, you know, it's an important element that also impacts, you know, new home as well, because a lot of new home construction is in the move up and luxury market where they're trying to, you know, the consumer is trying to sell an existing home to move into a new home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, the new construction piece is quite important here, because in the markets, as far as I understand, that Zillow and other companies had pretty aggressively entered with their iBuying technologies, there was a you know, like Phoenix, for example, a lot of sort of new subdivisions, so fairly similar homes built in the last 5 years or so. So fairly easy to price. And yet they still kind of got it wrong this year. So what impact, Jeff, do you think you know, the accumulation of all this information of algorithmically driven decisions is having on the industry?
You know, I think it's a positive approach. I think, though, you have to step back and see what the goal of these entities, you know, what they really are trying to solve for. Because if you look about it, you know, buying a home in North America today is extremely complicated. There's a lot of friction, you know, getting a mortgage and all the fees associated with it. So it's not really about the house. It's about the customer journey. And I think if you look at Zillow and why they failed, it's not, I wouldn't put it all on the algorithm. The algorithm is just sort of the lead bait to get the consumer into the funnel and the customer journey. I think where they failed is they scaled so rapidly. They're trying to, I think they acquired 27,000 plus or minus homes the last couple of years. And there's a physical element to it. And so I think they just scaled too fast. And I think it is something that I think could be really positive for the industry overall, because purchasing a home is very difficult. Mm. And you saw the recent developments of, you know, Opendoor acquiring Reddoor, a mortgage company, because if you look at all the fees associated with the transaction of a home, you know, they can be upwards in a new construction home, 8 to 10%. So the more we can make this efficient, the more we can, you know, benefit the consumer. And sure, the fintech companies will gain, you know, those fees as well. But I think they can compress the fees on the home transaction.
Okay.
Because it's a very inefficient model.
Yeah. So this is the key thing here. Let me turn back to Professor Matvos, because it's not, as Jeff is pointing out, the price of the home really isn't the issue. It's reducing all that friction that we've been talking about. And so to do that, inevitably, I'm fascinated by Opendoor acquiring that mortgage company. I mean, inevitably, do these companies have to sort of consolidate the businesses, be very vertically and integrated, essentially, with it, with the different stages or different aspects of the home buying market in order to, quote, provide those efficiencies?
Megna, I think there's a couple of places where I think if iBuyers innovated, they would make it a more viable business model. One is just like we talked about now, they bundle other services. I mean, this can be useful to support both sides, but to be honest, you know, the mortgage market right now, if you search a little bit, it's not like it's terribly inefficient. The inefficient part is that people don't search enough. I think if you really wanted to make iBuying valuable in its own right, I think what you have to fix is two fundamental issues of economics. One fundamental issue is vacancies. So one of the downsides that an iBuyer has in terms of the economics of providing the service is they have to leave the house vacant, right? So if I'm a homeowner who sells the house, I live in the house while I'm selling it. Now, I don't love the house, but it's better than being homeless. In other words, the house is being put to use. When an iBuyer buys the house is vacant. And that's an economic loss that has to come from somewhere, has to be replaced by something else. And so the question is, can iBuyers figure out a way to not leave houses vacant? Because vacant houses, first, are empty, and second, they get damaged more often because you don't notice the problems. So the question is, can they combine it with a rental business? Like, that'd be awesome. If iBuyers figure out a way to keep the houses occupied while selling them, that would be a huge gain in efficiency, would make the business model more viable. The other part is selling. I mean, iBuyers are not iSellers. They're no good at selling these houses relative to the average person. They're sort of, what we find is they're a little better at selling houses than the average person by pricing differently. But they don't find buyers faster. And the question is there a way to connect the house to buyers faster? If they can figure that part out, I think then iBuying has a real future ahead of us. Mm. It solves a fundamental problem in this market.
Okay, so
matching buyers and sellers.
Let me ask both of you a question, because we're getting some feedback online, which I completely understand. Patricia's telling us, today's program is making me angry. My instincts say bad. Now, I think those instincts are being triggered because we do have experience from 2008 about what happens when there are lots of new models or technologies or products entering a market with you know, at that time, loosely or unregulated, and no one really understands them, and they break down, and we have a national, international financial crisis. And just, you know, Jeff Myers, let's take it down to the level of the individual American homebuyer right now. I mean, what is your argument about why introducing fintech or different kinds of algorithms to reduce the friction that we're talking about? What's your argument for why that's, how can that be good for the individual home buyer in this country?
Well, I think it can reduce transaction costs. If you bought a home, you know, over the years and you look at the closing documents, I mean, the fees make you dizzy. It's escrow, it's title, it's insurance, it's the brokerage fee. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And the process is just so inefficient. And the home building industry and the housing industry in general is the last to be solved. And the challenge, though, is it's the biggest industry to be solved. So it's always been slow to adopt technology. And I think, you know, this is the first step. And there's, I think this year we're going from 8 to 10 billion invested in prop tech. And I think it's just, you know, when you ask an investor which industry, real estate vertical, is the furthest behind, it's typically housing. You know, where there's commercial apartments, but home building and housing is way behind on the technology step. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. So for the consumer, it's going to lower the cost of transaction. And I think the idea that, you know, they're destroying the housing market, I mean, you pointed out in Phoenix, you know, it's 5%. If they were 20, 25%, I'd say this could have a big impact on the consumer and could determine, you know, they could actually move the market. And move prices, you know, significantly. But given their percentage of market, it's just not, you know, I think they really do want to help the consumer. This isn't about greedy profit makers trying to make money off the consumer. They are trying to solve a big problem. The challenge is, this is not an easy problem. You know, solving the transaction over, you know, on an automobile is a lot easier than solving, you know, the transaction on a house. So I think that's what we're up against. And there's a physical element that I think really, if you look at Zillow, they hired thousands of employees very quickly, probably did not onboard and train them correctly. So when they did the physical inspection and determining the actual price and what they should close at, I think that's where a lot of failure took place. Yeah. And if, you know, when you talk to the Redfin CEO, you know, they moved in a much more, you know, measured way and selective markets and a slower process. So I think, you know, so is Opendoor. They haven't solved it yet, but they're getting better.
Right. Well, Jeff Myers, CEO of Zonda, a data intelligence company in the housing industry, with us from Orange County, California. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Professor Matvos, hang on here for just a second, because I do want to introduce the voice of someone who's thinking about the impacts locally of, you know, fintech or new technologies in American housing market. So this is someone who's concerned about iBuying and its impact locally.
The home market and especially development, these are things that need to happen at a local level. There's just way too much nuance.
That's Rachel Quedno. She's the program director at Strong Towns, a national nonprofit that helps communities become financially stronger and resilient. And she says she's not surprised that Zillow ended its iBuying business for now.
You got to have contractors and electricians and plumbers that you're connected to. And not to mention, those people are in really high demand right now. Supply chain issues mean that the tiles and the cabinets and things are backed up. So I'm guessing that all of those issues are why Zillow is now changing their mind on we can't actually pull this off, because we don't have that local connection and we can't actually see, like, what does this neighborhood need?
And Quedno says for communities to grow in a sustainable way, that local connection is essential. They need to have local investment. And so she says more people need to see the value in local developers. And she says the problem is that big companies come from the outside. They buy up property in local towns.
They can afford to sit on something and just, you know, have it be the roof caving in and nobody's fixing it for months because they have those deep pockets. And what we really advocate for at Strong Towns is small scale developers, incremental developers who know the neighborhood, but they can't afford to sit on something for 6 months. And the way that our housing market and our regulations are set up, often prioritizes and makes space for those big corporations that can afford that, and it's harder for the small guy.
That's Rachel Quednoe, a program director at Small Towns, a national nonprofit that helps communities to be financially stronger. Professor Matvos, we've got about three-ish minutes left here, and I want to hear from you what role you think that technology or iBuying could play in reducing the overall sort of big problems that we've been talking about in the American housing market. And then I've got a couple more questions for you, but go ahead on that one.
Okay. Yeah, so I think the easiest way for me to think about it is you asked before, what's the benefit of iBuying to buyers? And I think the benefit, direct benefit to buying to buyers is small to non-existent. But we should understand that in the U.S., individuals after age 18 move roughly 9 times before they turn, you know, before they turn sort of 60, 70. Okay, that tells us that moving is a thing that people do a lot, and we should make that easier, especially when it comes from a dimension of where we invest most of our wealth. Most U.S. households have all their wealth in the house. I think resolving that problem is important. And if that can be done locally, that's great. And if that can be done by big companies, that's great too, but let's just get it done.
What about the I think, very legitimate fear that could these technologies, could these companies end up distorting markets? I mean, again, like if you're sort of using a similar ethos-wise, a similar thought in terms of how people try to extract money from the stock market, how different is it from the housing market? I mean, we've got a question here from a listener who says, is there a fail-safe to prevent, say, a cascading buy-off or sell-off like with what has happened in the stock market, Professor Matvos?
So I think we should be certainly worried about these firms in the long run if they get too big. And we won't have time to discuss it, but there's a reason to believe that this cannot be a very competitive sector. We can't have 10 iBuyers, because if we have them, then they will have issues between each other. So in short, I think in the long run, if they ever grow huge, we should be worried because A, it could distort the market on the fees, but B, it could lead to vacancies that are excessive. Excessive means they keep houses open, unoccupied to drive prices up. But I don't think we're there right now at all because they're just too small, even in big markets like Phoenix. And the second was right now, I mean, I'm looking at the economics of this business. And unless they change it, they're not going to rule the U.S. I mean, they're all losing money. So my answer would be, if we ever get to the stage where these guys start, you know, being 20% of transactions or, you know, in a market, or we're talking several percentage points of transactions nationwide, I think then, yes, there's definitely possibilities for there to be issues. But I think on the other hand, they're providing a valuable service. Let's see how far they can even get there. Before we worry about in the future, if they ever get huge, we're going to have issues.
Yeah.
But I think we should keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on the vacancies, for example. That'd be a good indication of, is the market starting to go haywire? And then I think, you know, as they start climbing, which let's see if they can, we can take a look again.
Right. So in my view, that makes this the best time to start taking the look now, right? Before the problem actually emerges when things get too big. So Professor Gregor Matvos, the chair of finance at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, speaking to us from Evanston, Illinois. Professor Matvos, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Meghna, thanks for having me on the show.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.